Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thursday night get together here on The Fan. Jody Mack hanging out with you. Yes, it's been a Met show so far. Not really a surprise, but plenty of NBA and other things we're getting into. But the Mets have kind of drawn most of the attention of the fans here in New York. And here he gives some insight is a guy who thought he was going to be able to take a deep breath before he had to show up in Florida and get ready for spring training and has been working his tail off these last couple of weeks because of all of the issues with the Met front office. Tim Ealy, Mets beat writer for Newsday, good enough to hop aboard with us here on The Fan. How are you tonight, Tim?
I'm excellent, thanks. How are you?
Good. How has your February been so far?
A little bit busier. You know, late January usually is a very quiet time for baseball, and for baseball reporters, it's a pretty great time of year typically. This year, less so. From the Beltran Astros stuff to the Rojas hiring, to it did quiet down there for a few days, and then all of a sudden the Steve Cohen stuff kicked up again this week. It's been an interesting stretch for sure heading into spring training.
Let me give you the analogy that I came up with the Mets situation and the potential change of ownership that now seems to have gone by the board. It reminds me of like a couple of kids coming in from, summer camp in the middle of July, and they walk into their house after getting off the bus, and they go into the dining room, and mom's made a phenomenal turkey Christmas dinner. And they look around and can't believe what's happening. And there's dad with this big smile on his face, and he says, guess what? Christmas has just come in July. And the kids start doing high fives and jumping and screaming and yelling. And they eventually, after eating, go into the other room, and there's the Christmas tree, and there's not a present to be found. And they look at dad and say, what the heck? I thought you said it was Christmas. He goes, well, I had a deal with Santa Claus. I don't know what the hell happened. And there are no presents under the tree. What the hell happened in the conversation with Dad and Santa, a.k.a. the Wilpons and Cohen?
Well, it depends on who you believe, but it sounds like the Wilpons, much as was the case with Dave Einhorn in 2011, moved the target a little bit, moved the field post, the goal post. Steve Cohen seemed like a savior of sorts to Mets fans. You know, he was Santa Claus in December, essentially. And, you know, when you think about selling the team and finding a new owner, it doesn't get any better than a super rich guy who grew up a Mets fan, is already a minority owner, and wants to just become the majority owner for what would be a record price. And then it all fell apart for reasons that aren't entirely clear, but seems to be Jeff and or Fred Wilpon essentially taking the ball away from Charlie Brown as he's running up to kick it.
Now, you don't know what was said in the discussions in the room. I don't know what was said in the It's a he said conversation now, so you have to be able to draw some of your own conclusions and work off what other people are telling you. A guy who I would believe would be a pretty credible source is the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. And he has come out and basically said, as far as he can figure, the Wilpons did not go back or renege on anything that they said, that Steve Cohen is the one who has put the kibosh on this deal. Do we just take Rob Manfred at his word?
I don't. He described the report blaming the Wilpons as unfair, not as untrue. I think that's a worthwhile distinction. And it's also worth remembering that as commissioner of baseball, the Wilpons are one of our Manfred's bosses. Manfred works on behalf of the owners of all 30 teams, including the Mets, and therefore has a vested interest in making the Mets and making the Wilpons look good in this particular scenario. So I don't really take his word point blank on this. Never mind all of the other many issues that Manfred has been questionably transparent on, you know, in recent months and years, from the quality control of the baseballs to the minor league plan, things along those lines. So to answer the question, no, I don't really take Manfred's word at face value here.
Okay, the one thing I'll say in Manfred's defense is Jim Crane works for him too, and it didn't stop him from coming down pretty hard on the organization, suspending his general manager, suspending his owner, and then Crane doubled down and fired both guys. So it isn't like Manfred has done the owner's bidding at every single turn since he's taken over as commissioner.
Sure, I think a lot of people within baseball would point to the fact that Jim Crane himself got off pretty easy in that whole deal. He got a $5 million fine, which for somebody who owns a baseball team and whose baseball team won the World Series isn't very much money, as unfathomable as $5 million is to so many of us. But it was, you know, Hinch and Luhnow and to a much lesser degree the players who sort of got blamed for all that. But that's besides the point. That's different topic entirely.
Fair enough. We're talking to Tim Healy, Mets beat writer for Newsday, here with us on The Fan. All right, so we sit here now with a fractured deal. We don't know if it's 100% broken, but it's going to take some major mending of fences if it goes through. I'm highly doubting that something like that can be restructured. If that's the case, what does Cohen do as a minority owner of the Mets now? There's got to be some pretty hurt feelings at a bare minimum between these two parties. How can they work together going forward?
Well, as a minority owner, and Cohen has an 8% stake in the Mets after buying up pieces of it, you know, 8-9 years ago or so, he's not really involved too much in day-to-day operations. He has a business card that says owner. He's allowed access to suites and things along those lines. But as far as being at the ballpark with any regularity or, frankly, being there for anything but attending games, I'm not sure that really matters as far as, you know, any sort of working relationship or power dynamic within the organization as it exists now. So I don't really expect any change or issues there. Besides, sure, some awkwardness with, you know, you run into each other in the tunnel, or maybe Steve Cohen will want to sell his portion of the team. You never know. It's going to be for him to decide. But aside from some awkwardness, I don't expect major repercussions.
Does he have the ability to just sell his position in the team for whatever price he can get, or does it have to go in front of the board of directors and be approved by those who he's in partnership with? Can he just cut the best deal that he could possibly cut and say, I'm the heck out of here?
That's a good question, and I do not know the, you know, machinations of minority owners and how they come and go. So it's a good question, and I just don't know the answer.
Okay, fair enough. I would have a tough time still being partner in a team that I tried to buy and then got the rug pulled out from underneath me, but that's just me. We'll see where it goes from here. You mentioned the change at manager, one the Mets were not banking on. Did the Mets do okay with their replacement hire? Because I happen to be a fan of the guy they got. I think they kind of lucked in to an actual better choice as manager.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I thought, you know, in September when it looked like they were going to need a manager, and then in October, as they indeed looked for a manager, Rojas, to me, on paper and in reality, from what I saw, just him being around the team, knowing the players, I thought he was a great choice. I thought he was a great choice in October, and it wasn't a surprise at all that he got a few interviews, made a couple rounds during that initial manager search by the Mets. And then, you know, of course, they go with Beltran, superstar returns to the Mets, etc. And that was fun. That could have gone great for the Mets. We'll never know. But, you know, for the mess that they accidentally found themselves in, I think they made out all right landing on Rojas. It is very unusual, you know, just the time of year he got hired, having to fly by the seat of his pants a little bit going to his first spring training next week. But I'm confident that he'll figure it out. He's always struck me as a calm, smart, well-spoken guy. And I think those three qualities, in addition to knowing the players to the degree that he does, I think that all goes a long way.
Agree with that. I think they actually kind of got lucky because I think Rojas has got a chance to be a real nice skipper. Back to the Mets and finances. The deal between the Wilpons, the handshake, the agreement, call it what you want. We know that it wasn't a binding deal because it is now blown up. But the thought path that the organization was moving along with what they thought was going to fall into place hasn't happened. Does it have an immediate effect on the team in the next several months? Will the Mets actually, believing that they could have better financing going forward with Cohen stepping up his participation, will they now look to potentially cut payroll and or not carry as heavy a burden going into the season? Will Mets fans not only be disappointed, but turn around and actually get ticked off with the way the Mets handle themselves financially going into the season?
Well, from what I can tell, Mets fans are already pretty ticked off, but I don't expect further course changes because the deal fell apart from the financial side. I don't think they'll have to, you know, cut payroll or anything along those lines. At pretty much every turn this offseason, right, they announced the Cohen deal or the pending deal in early December, and every move since then was a pretty small move. They only handed out a few one-year contracts. They didn't add very much to their net 2020 payroll. With the renegotiating of the Cespedes contract, they actually came out pretty even from where they were heading into the offseason. So it's not like the Mets went out and spent Cohen's money before they had it. So I don't expect them to have to refigure things now that he is likely out of the picture.
If they are a contender come trade deadline, and they have the right to be. I think the NL East is going to be a tough division. You got four superior teams, and the Marlins, I think, are at least trying to get better. I don't know how successful they'll be at it. You ran against some pretty tough squads in the defending champion Nats and the Braves, who won 90-plus games. The Phillies think they're going to be better with Joe Girardi. I'm not saying it's a cakewalk, but if they're in that wild card grouping late in July, will they be a team that will take on a big contract if they think he's a difference maker?
I can't say point blank yes 100% because it's been a few years since they were in that position. In 2015, for example, they went out and got Cespedes, and they were in a situation then where, yes, they could add a little bit of payroll. I'm inclined to say yes. I also think the idea of adding mid-season payroll for a difference maker is a little bit overblown, just because at that point it's only going to be two plus months of salary. So really, what's it going to be? You know, a few million dollars, depending on what kind of player you're adding. So if they are in a position of contending come trade deadline time, which they haven't been in a few years now, I do expect them to add without it being a major issue. There's always some bookkeeping to go on, but I wouldn't expect it to be a bottom line impediment.
Fair enough. We're talking to Tim Haley from Newsday here on The Fan. One of the things Rob Manfred said was, or maybe it was John Heyman with a tweet that he put out, I think he was quoting and paraphrasing Manfred, that it looks like the Wilpons will continue their effort to sell a team, but maybe in more of an auction style going forward. Why do I have a tough time believing that?
Watching the Wilpons sell the Mets will be like when you see Cespedes hitting home runs every other night and playing left field. You'll believe it when you see it, right?
Fair enough.
The Mets watching community thought in December that this was pretty much done, and then it wasn't. So that fell apart. If the Wilpons want to pursue a sale of the team with other parties, then yeah, sure, they can explore that. I think they probably get approached every now and then, and it doesn't get very far, just because that's how major league teams are. There are always people interested in buying major league teams. There are far fewer people who have the financial wherewithal to actually buy the team. Steve Cohen was one of them, so it's too bad that fish is getting away, but there'll always be more people to try.
All right, last thing, We know the Knicks hired a new president today. They went down the Met road. Bring in an agent. Turn him into a general manager slash president.
It's worked out so well the past 15, 16 months for the Mets, you know?
Okay, we'll see how it works out for the Knicks. But the owner of the Knicks, from time to time, gets serenaded in his own building with chance of sell the team. Will the Wilpons hear that in 2020 at Citi Field?
I've wondered that myself the past couple of days. I usually try not to draw conclusions about fan sentiment based on the vocal people on Twitter, but in this particular scenario, fans via email, via fans I know in real life on Twitter or whatever it may be, seem angrier than normal, which is fair. I get that. Mets fans, deserve good things. They're a very loyal fan base. So will that frustration wane come late March, April, by the time they're actually playing at Citi Field? I don't know. It depends on what happens between now and then. But I think the sell the team chants at Madison Square Garden the other night were striking. And it wouldn't surprise me if those pop up at Citi Field, but we'll have, again, a lot could change between now and then.
Well, you get the first taste of it down in Port St. Lucie, and then they'll bring it back to Queens. Timmy, good stuff. Yeah. Appreciate you coming on board. Thanks for a couple minutes of insight tonight.
Thank you.
Tim Healy from Newsday, the Mets beat writer, joining us here on The Fan. Jody Mack hanging with you, letting you be heard, too, 877-337-6666. Get aboard my phones on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.